Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Live Beyond podcast. My name is Jacqueline, and I am super excited about today's episode. We are wrapping up our Living Missionally series, and today we are asking the question of now what? Now that you have had all of the information that we have been giving you, what do you do with that now? So today I am with Dr. Vanderpool. He is going to be answering that question, and I, for one, am so, so excited to hear what he has to say. So Dr. V, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great. Thanks for being. It's great to be here.
Yes. Well, we are wrapping up this series, which has been so fun to create and talk about with you. But like I just said, now what? What do we do with all of that information that you've been giving us?
That's a great question. And that's the hard one. It really is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot easier to serve overseas, especially in a place like Haiti, than it is at home. Mm-hmm. People at home know you. You know, it was sort of like Jesus growing up in Nazareth and people saying, can anything good come out of Nazareth? So it's a little bit like that. And so it is a challenge to serve at home.
Well, I think that this is going to be super, super incredible. So starting off, I think kind of the first question that I have, so many people have come up to me and asked me this question. I know they've probably come up and asked you this question as well. But it's, what do I have to do to be a missionary? And so I think that's going to kind of be the first one. What is kind of those first couple of steps that you can take if you're really wanting to be a long-term missionary?
Well, being a long-term missionary is nothing to be taken lightly. It is a very involved process, and there's a lot of struggles, there's a lot of stress that come alongside being a long-term missionary. So preparation is absolutely key. Mm-hmm. One of the first things that I recommend for people to do, though, is to serve at home. Mm-hmm. I think that is absolutely essential. If you can't serve your neighbors, if you can't serve the people of your community, how in the world are you going to go to a foreign country and serve people there? So I think that's really the first thing that has to happen is that you've got to serve your own community first.
So I remember when I was a junior in college, it was the summer after my junior year, I was talking to you, we were in Haiti, and I just said, oh man, you know, I'm ready to be here. Like, I'm ready to be living in Haiti. I knew I wanted to move here, move to Haiti as soon as I graduated college. And I was kind of kicking myself that I had a whole year before that would happen. And you looked at me and you said, what are you doing back in College Station to prepare yourself to come down here? And I remember, I was like, how dare you ask me that question? I have been doing short-term missions with Live Beyond since I was in seventh grade. Like, this has been a long time coming. Like, excuse me. And then I thought about it and I was like, oh my goodness, you are so right. What am I doing back in College Station to prepare? And I mean, that was an eye-opening question. And I'm so glad you asked me that because it completely transformed my entire senior year of college to really not be so me-focused and to seek other people, to love other people, to invite other people into kind of those steps and what that looked like. And I mean, it completely changed everything for me. So yeah, I can say from personal experience, it was a little bit of a kick in the stomach, but it was a good one to have because I clearly needed it.
Well, and that's, so you know, that's you. So common with people. Mm-hmm. They think they can serve, you know, in a place like Haiti, but then they don't serve their own family. They don't serve their own community. And there's so many things that can be done locally that will prepare you to serve mm-hmm. overseas. But it's also a good way to test yourself. You know, yeah. If you don't enjoy serving locally in your own community, in your own neighborhood, if you're not serving your own family, then there's just no way that you're going to be prepared to withstand all the difficulties that you're going to encounter in the developing world.
Yeah. And I think another piece of advice I'm going to speak for you that you gave to me was serve in the capacity that you're wanting to serve with where you go. And so for me, I really wanted to be focusing on the evangelism and the spiritual development and spiritual life and things like that. And so I got in the practice of sharing the gospel on campus and going and praying with people where they were studying and just talking to people and hearing about their life and things like that. And it gave me a sense of confidence that I could have never gathered somewhere else to be able to go and do that in Haiti. And so, you know, I think if you want to go serve in some sort of capacity, find out what mirrors what you're wanting to do on the mission field and do that stateside. Because I think it'll prepare
absolutely
you for it.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's so good, especially because it's a little difficult to share the gospel with your peers. You know, it's sort of okay if you can get into a completely different circumstance, like Haiti. But when you share the gospel with your friends, that makes it personal. But that's what the gospel is. It's personal. And so having those relationships, building those relationship muscles so that you're strong is very, very important. So I think that's exactly right.
I love it. So what are some things that you can be doing stateside that look like that preparation? What kind of opportunities can you think of?
Well, you know, if you are thinking about becoming a long-term missionary in a very bottom-tier country, then I think it's important for you then to think about people who are at the bottom rungs of our society and to serve those people. That's going to get you trained to their problems. And typically their problems are the same no matter where they are. And so, for instance, if you're going to be serving in rural Haiti where there's extreme poverty, where there's hunger, where they don't have clean water, where they're undereducated, then I think going in and serving with the homeless in the United States is a great idea. You'll learn a lot about the homeless. You'll realize that you have preconceptions that are not correct about the homeless. And so that will empower you, give you the knowledge base to then translate that into other areas. Now, there are differences. It's very difficult to find the poverty level of Haiti or a place like Haiti in the United States. It just doesn't exist. People think it does, but it's just not there. And so, you know, you really have to stretch yourself. You know, we always say that you need to train for what you're wanting to do. You don't want to train for something else and then go on and do something else. If you're wanting to be a marathoner, you know, you don't need to swim, you know, you need to run, right? And so that's the kind of effort that we need to make. We need to train for what we're going to experience. And we might be able to see that in the inner city where perhaps the children need help with education. So going in and tutoring children who are struggling in school, that's a great thing to do. And it makes you realize what their struggles are, because you have to embrace the people's struggles that you're serving to be effective. And you have to know what those are. And most of us will have biases and preconceived notions that we've grown up with that are not correct. If you try to apply one of your biases to the situation, you're going to fail miserably and the people will be frustrated. And that's true no matter where you're serving. And so getting through those biases, getting through those preconceived notions in your own country and practicing and getting those muscles in good shape before you go to serve long term, I think is ideal.
Absolutely. So what about like literature and things? What are some things that we can be reading that you really feel like could help prepare us for the mission field?
Well, you know, it is a little difficult because there's not just a whole lot out there on missions, you know, that's written from a long-term perspective. You know, there's some great books about people who have served in very violent areas, and they've lost their life, you know, over that. And I think there's some good books. That there's another little book that's called Live Beyond. I can't remember who wrote that one, but
how bizarre! Tell me more.
It's a great book. It's a real page turner. No. But, you know, I think you make a good point. You know, reading as many of the stories as you can, especially by people, you know, who are long-term missionaries. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very important for the excitement phase to be off. You need to have struggled. You need to have failed. You need to have had very difficult times before you really get the feel for what it's going to be like and what the solutions mm-hmm. are. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people come down and they're, you know, they're very naive. They really don't know what it's like, and they just can't handle it. And it's unfortunate to see that, because these are often people who are very passionate about missions. And had they spent more time in the front end getting prepared, they would have done a lot better, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know for me, some of the books that really helped me in my moving process and kind of helped me rewire some of my preconceived notions or things that I just hadn't even thought about. Absolutely, Live Beyond, A Radical Call to Surrender and Serve by this really great, talented surgeon. His name is Dr. David Vanderpool.
There you go. Good pitch.
Thank you. No, your book truly is incredible. And for me, it was kind of fun because, you know, in my mind, I've been around since the conception of Live Beyond and what was MMDR at the beginning, but getting to see your story pre-me being born was really cool to see the things that really solidified and made concrete your desire to be a missionary. And so I think that you definitely have written something that anyone can learn from, so definitely recommend that one. But also Love Does by Bob Goff. I think that was a great way for me to think about loving people and serving people in another way, as well as Radical by David Platt. That one I read like the week before I moved, and it rocked my world. And then I also do love Kisses from Katie by Katie Davis. That one was one that I read in high school that really kind of gave me the courage and the determination to pursue missions. And so I really, really love those. For me personally, that those were important for my journey. The next question that I have for you is one that I've actually been thinking about quite often, and is, what do you wish you had known? And this is going to be a two-part question. One, before you started short-term missions, and two, before you went into long-term missions.
Well, that's a really good question. And, you know, it's a little bit complicated, because the things that I wish I had known, I only could have learned through the cauldron that is long-term missions, you know. And so it's one of those things that you like to have known it, but there's no way you could have, kind of thing.
Right. Or you if know, someone told you, you wouldn't believe it. You'd be like, exactly. Yeah, whatever. That's not it.
Right. Right. You know, it's like, you know, the violence that's been perpetrated against us. You know, you can talk about that all day, but until it happens to you, you really don't have any feel for, you know, the intensity and your reactions and things like that. And so much of it is, you know, just having the humility. I think the main thing that you can bring to missions is humility, and having that humility to accept your position and then be able to gather in the Lord's leading on whatever circumstance you're in, whether you've been robbed, you know, 20 times, whether you've been a pistol whipped, whether you've had, you know, people beat you up and steal from you. You know, that is really only answered. Those problems are really only answered, you know, by the Lord's leading. And so having the humility to accept that, and also having the humility to accept wisdom from people who've been long-term missionaries for a while. You know, that's something that we've not found very many short-term mission people have. They usually will come in and tell us how to do it. And, you know, having the humility to realize that long-term missionaries have a lot to teach you, but you got to listen. And unfortunately, you know, that's generally not the case. You know, and there are lots of ways, like we were talking before, that you can really test yourself. So I think it's important to test yourself for humility, and to really see how much you have to offer. Try to develop things that will be useful in the mission field. You know, you don't want to go into the mission field and just be dependent upon everybody. And so often that's the case. You know, learn the language of wherever you're going so that you can converse with the people. Is it hard? Absolutely, it's hard. It's very difficult. It's hard for everybody. But if you don't do that, then you're dependent upon the long-term missionary to provide you with a translator or something like that, which is really is a tremendous burden on the entire mission. It takes money away from the mission. It takes people who would be working in that capacity away from the mission. And so having that, it's actually a humble status to say, I'm going to learn the language before I go so I can be independent. You know, try to get some skill sets that you could bring with you rather than just sort of coming in and saying to the long-term missionary, here I am, I'm wonderful, you know, tell me what to do. You know, that's not the kind of attitude that does very well in the mission field. And so, you know, if you can bring something to the table where you can work independently, you'll take leading from the people you're working with, but you'll be able to function independently of the long-term missionaries if possible. You know, doing work like this. So I remember back in the 90s, we helped start an indigent medical clinic in the little town we were living in. And this medical clinic was created to take care of people who were working but were poor and couldn't afford insurance. So the poor had Medicaid, the elderly had Medicare, but then there was this gap of people who weren't making enough money to buy insurance and their employers didn't provide it. And so those people, there were a lot of those people in this little town. So assessing that need, finding that. And it was the kind of thing that you got to talk with these people, you got to help them, and you realized, you know, why they were struggling. You got to empathize with these people. And I remember on many occasions thinking, you know, I could be on the other side of this table. I mean, this could be me. It wouldn't take much at all. And so having that sympathy with the people that you're serving, and it's truly sympathy. You're with them. You're coming together with them, and you're struggling with them, you know, and so you're providing a service that will allow them to improve. It's more than just empathy, you know. It's more than just having this feeling of, oh, I feel sorry for them. That's not what we're talking about. It is sympathy where you're coming together, you're holding their hands, they're pulling together, and you're accomplishing something. That's something you can train yourself in. And so learning these things, bringing that to the table where you can come in and really benefit the organization rather than being dependent upon them for your existence. You know, all your food, somebody's got to cook that. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't cook itself. You know, if you're just totally dependent upon others for that to happen, you know, you're not bringing, you know, much to benefit the organization. So thinking about things like that, I think, are just extremely important. You know, the way we approach missions is a little different than most people. You know, we are an organization that is a humanitarian development organization. So we're trying to improve people's lives. So that's, you know, our mission statement is to transform the lives of the people for the kingdom of God. And so we're trying to take them from a place of you know dependency and doing without to a place of stability. And so we're providing clean water, we're providing nutritional support, we're providing health care, those kinds of things. And we do that to spread the gospel. So that's the front end, though, is those are all skill sets, and these are skill sets that you can learn and you can bring to the organization. Perhaps you are tutoring kids, like we said, in an inner city school. Well, that's translatable now to a village in Africa or a village in Haiti that has very undereducated individuals. Maybe you teach literacy to the adults. Well, that's something you could learn in the States, bring that to the country you're going to serve in, and now you're helping develop the village. You're bettering people. It's the best way to spread the gospel that I know of. Mm-hmm. Just preaching at them doesn't work very well when they're hungry. And so you've got to figure out some way to do that. Very few people that we've interacted with really brought a whole lot to the organization. And I think that's tough. You know, that really is a difficult situation where they just didn't have that idea that they're there to serve and not be served.
Mm, absolutely. Well, I know for me personally, one of the things that I wish I had known when I was doing short-term missions, and obviously not just with Live Beyond, I did it through our local church and different things like that, but I wish that I had gone in with the mindset of serving the local missionaries as well. That, you know, serve the people, absolutely. That was, you know, probably when I was in high school, my main focus was what was I going to get out of it. But serving the people, but then also serving the local missionaries and making sure that I seek ways to help and encourage them as well, rather than criticize and critique, because it can be amazing at how one helpful word can buoy you, you know, through a difficult time or a difficult season, but how also one critical word can also really, you know, devastate you as well. And so if I had been thinking past myself when I was in high school, to serve the local people, but then also the local missionaries, I think that would have changed a lot for me.
Well, I think that mindset is wonderful, because if you're coming in to a long-term missionary organization, you're looking at folks who are working incredible hours. It's just, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Just living. I mean, you think about our base. We generate all of our own electricity, and we do that by solar power. And so it is a tremendous effort to have put that together, make that work, and then have generators for backups and all this kind of thing. And keep we do the running. Same thing. Keep them running. That's right. And so, you know, you think, well, we just have electricity. All you have to do is pay the bill. Well, that's just not the case in Haiti. If you want electricity, you've got to figure it out. Water, we pump all our own water and we purify it. Sewage, we treat all our own sewage. These are things that really you don't think about, you know, in the States, but somebody had to put all that together. Mm-hmm. And that somebody is the long-term missionary who's, you know, made his life there. And so you're looking at somebody who is working incredible hours, and they are doing everything from surgery to cleaning the room in between surgery, you know, and keeping the generators running. And so it's just a very arduous process. And having an ability to bring life into that situation where you're encouraging and not criticizing is just amazing. And so that it would help the long-term mission tremendously to have people encouraging. Unfortunately, that's not the way it usually works, but wish it did.
Yeah. I think too, and this, you kind of touched on this earlier, if someone had told me this beforehand, I would have completely dismissed it. So like you said, this was definitely, I have to learn through the experience. But what I wish I had known before going into long-term missions is that there are going to be lasting effects that missions has on you as a whole, even when you have stepped off of the mission field. So I know, you know, I lived in Haiti for 2 years. I absolutely loved every second of it. I would be back down there in a heartbeat if I could. It was the best 2 years of my life, and I will willingly give anything in order to go back and do that again. But what I have learned of, you know, being 2 years out of it is that there have been some things that, like, it affects you mentally. Like, it can, like, there are situations that you can experience that will take a toll on your mental health. And, like, that's just the sacrifice that you make. And I know for me, you know, I was prideful going into it, thinking, like, I've been seeing war-torn countries and difficult things since I was really young, because I've been, like, nothing, like, I'm untouchable. Like, nothing can affect me. I have an ironclad mind, you know, like, I'll be fine. And that's not, like, the case, you know? And so I think just knowing, would I change it for the world? Absolutely not. Like, I would go do it again in a heartbeat. Knowing what I know now, I would go back and do it in a heartbeat. But just understanding that, like, one, it's really hard. Is it worth it? Yes. But it's really hard. Two, you're going to see some things that, like, you probably in your wildest dreams would have never imagined. Like, I'm not a medical personnel, and I never even would have been able to put into words thinking that, like, I would see multiple dead infants in my time down there. Like, that just never would have crossed my mind. And, like, those are the images that I have that have affected, like, those are the instances that have affected me long term, in that, like, were traumatizing, like, to say the least. And so, you know, I think it's just, like, knowing that, like, that's just, that it's normal. That's how your brain reacts to things. Like, it's, you're healthy, like, that's okay. But I think if I had just kind of had this mentality of, like, you are going to see things, you're going to experience things, you know, whether or not it's happening to you personally, like, if you see it happening to someone else, that, like, it can be hard. And multiple years out of being on the mission field, like, that can resurface and affect you again. And that's okay. Like, that is normal. And, like, you're doing great, but that's just a part, like, a part of it. So I wish that that is something that I had not been so prideful on, to think that, like, there was nothing that was going to, like, make me pause or hesitate, or, you know, wouldn't wake me up in the middle of the night, you know, like, those kinds of things. And not that I think it would have changed anything, but I think it would have made me feel much more normal, and, like, that's okay, you know? So I think that's just, again, I would go back and do it in a millisecond. But, like, just the understanding that, like, you know, there are going to be some things that are difficult, and that's okay. And how your body and your brain react to it, like, that's okay too.
Well, and that's such a great point, because, you know, culture shock is real. And I was like you, I thought, I've been doing this for years and years, and I'm not going to be susceptible to culture shock. Well, that was the thing that got me, you know.
It comes to ringing.
It does, and it's a real thing. Unfortunately, you know, there aren't very many groups or psychologists who are helpful in this. Most of them haven't experienced it themselves, and so they really don't understand the roots of it or the prevention and how to treat it. And so it's really interesting looking at the subject. There's not a lot written about it. It's something that we are including in a book that we should publish next year on missions. But it's just really dramatic. And it is a real problem, because you see things. the more the culture that you are going to as a guest is different from your home culture, that the bigger that distinction is, the harder it hits you. And then if you're there for a longer period of time, it takes about, you know, 6 months or so for people to really work through that culture shock. It never goes away, but you just learn how to manage it, you know. And so, but then if you go back home, you experience, they call it reverse culture shock. It's not really reverse. It's still culture shock, you know.
Yeah.
And then you experience that. And so it's really fascinating. We've actually had people leave who had spent about 5 months in country. They were going through tremendous culture shock and left prior to the 6 month time period. It really is phenomenal how 6 months typically is the length of time it takes you to really acclimate to the new culture. And we've had people leave prior to giving it enough time, even though, you know, we counsel them not to, to just sort of wait it out a little bit. They did anyway. And they never really resolve. That's sort of the problem, is they just, they never quite shake it after that. And so it's a real, it's a real shame. It takes a commitment to stay, to dig in, you know, and be strong and get the work done. But you've got to stay long enough, you know, when you have a very different culture, it takes time. But you're right. It is a tremendous shock. You know, it's funny, when we're back in the States, you know, we'll have, the air conditioner will be running and it'll turn off, and I'll wake up thinking that the electricity's off. I need to go fix the generator. That's my first response, you know, is I grab my flashlight.
I don't miss doing that. I will say, I don't necessarily miss doing miss that at 2 o'clock
in the morning. Yeah. You always keep the flashlight and the tool set close by, and, you know, go to work. But it really is different, you know, and it's very challenging, and you know, people really need to prepare themselves for that. It's not something that somebody can do for you, and I think that's a lot of things that people miss, is they think, well, this will be the responsibility of somebody else. No, it's yours. You've got to take it, that responsibility, and but there are going to be things that will haunt you. And, you know, death is one of them. You know, in our society, United States, you don't see death. I mean, that's very, very rare, unless you're in, you have a profession that does that. But just the normal person would hardly ever encounter that. Well, in the bottom tier countries, it's all the time. You know, it's very, very frequent. Yeah. And so it's a very difficult thing to wrap your arms around. And it's not enough just to have, well, I have a heart for missions. You know, people tell me that all the time. Mm-hmm. I just have a heart for missions. And I'm thinking it's going to take a whole lot more than a heart to get you through it. You know, a heart alone is not nearly enough. You got to have a brain, and you've got to have, you know, the intestinal fortitude to stay. And that's a rare quantity.
Yeah. Well, I know for me, you know, I felt so much shame in, you know, for me, it was, I saw a good friend of mine's child die. And I was the one who had to make sure that the baby, you know, wasn't breathing and didn't have a pulse. And I had just completely blocked it in my memory and woke up in the middle of the night a couple of months ago and remembered it and felt so much shame that I could forget a moment that was probably one of the worst moments of my good friend's lives. You know, like, how could I forget something that is probably the worst moment of his life? And felt so much shame in that. And just like, I was distraught that I could do that. And it was actually in talking to you and saying like, what have I done? Like, how did this happen? You know, I can remember other things, but how did that just completely be erased from my memory? And talking to you, and you said like, no, like that's your brain protecting itself. Like, that is a normal thing. That is okay. Like, you can talk to people, you can seek help. And I think you know, in talking to you about it, it gave me the courage to then go and seek help to talk to other people about it too. And like, that's a responsibility that I have, you know, to take care of myself, but also to like, you know, it just, so I am grateful that I had someone that I could talk to that could encourage me to like, that one, it was okay and it was normal and healthy, and two, that it's like okay to find help for it too. But I just never could have wrapped my mind around that before going down there.
Well, and it's so common. And it is hard, and it's very fortunate that the Lord made our brain repress certain things, or we'd go crazy. You know, you know, we every once in a while we'll go through and make a list of just the hard times, you know, and it's always it's so interesting because we'll have a sort of a list going, and then we'll say, oh well, but there was that other time that you know that we just keep adding because we've forgotten, you know. And at the time, it was just almost insurmountable. You know, you weren't sure you're going to survive, and fortunately, your brain keeps that from happening, or we'd all be crazy.
Well, I do know for me personally, so I don't necessarily, I'm not going to speak for you, but I also feel fairly confident that you'll agree with me on this one, is that for every bad moment that I had down there, there were 100 great ones that just was the wind in your sails, that was the balm on your heart, that was the thing that you needed to keep going, that was the encouragement that your soul needed, that just was a gift from the Lord and saying like, you're here, it's good, I got you kind of moment.
Well, that's so true. And, you know, that's, it's not the reason we do it, but it is so great to have that. And, you know, that's one of the things that I think is so wonderful, is really feeling that you're just right on the center line of the Lord's will. You know, it's just, he said, go into all the world and spread the gospel, and you are, you know. And as a long-term missionary, that's something that I'm very glad I can say, you know, and I'm very glad that that we have that. And it's such a boost for me in the the tough times, you know, because you've got to have that feeling that you're not, that the Lord likes you more or that he's more, you know, he's happier. None of that. It's just that he wants this and you're doing that. You know, that's something you're trying to accomplish. And that is such a wonderful place to be.
Absolutely. Well, you kind of mentioned this a little bit when I first asked this question, but you were talking about the humility to learn the language and to also have certifications to do those things. So that's actually where my next two questions for you are. I'm a big like practical learner, so I'm asking you very direct questions of like, let's spell this out because this is how I learn. So what are some of those certifications that you really feel like, you know, I know you're medical personnel, so it certainly makes sense to have a lot of those medical ones, but what are some things that medical personnel and non-medical personnel alike can really learn that you feel like are really great for the mission field?
Well, that's a great question, and there's so many things that you can do. You know, getting ESL certified, where you can teach English as a second language. You know, in most countries in the world, English is the ticket to success. It's certainly true in Haiti, even though the official language is French and most people just speak Creole. If they know English, they're going to make a lot more money working than they would otherwise. And that's true in so many different countries. And so being able to teach English as a second language is just phenomenal. Literacy training, again, we mentioned that, but it really bears talking about more, because if you're in a bottom tier country, like the countries that we focus on, giving people the gift of literacy is a huge thing. And you can transform, say, a woman who may be 35 years old and has four or five kids, you can transform her life, where she could have a job where she's doing a lot more, making a lot more money, providing for her family. And so it's a tremendous boost for people. You know, on the medical side, things like CPR, just getting basic CPR training, and then getting trained to teach it is phenomenal. You know, we see so many deaths that are completely preventable. There was absolutely no reason they had to happen. And so CPR is one of the reasons. If you can teach people, so you could have a class to teach CPR is phenomenal. Pediatric CPR, helping babies breathe, things like that are all just tremendous educational benefits to people really anywhere. But that's especially true in these low-tier countries. You know, and so being able to teach that is phenomenal. You know, so things, you know, that people sort of understand, you know, are seminary experience or being able to teach a Bible class. You certainly don't need a seminary degree to do that. But if you know the language and you could, say you're a female and you could teach a women's Bible class, that could be both literacy, it could be English as a second language, and it could be Bible knowledge. You know, it's a tremendous service. And it also gives camaraderie to the women. Things like that, you know, understanding, helping women learn how to breastfeed, you know, that's an enormous problem in the low-tier countries. It gives you the ability to be part of their community and to really benefit the women. And so it's things like that, you know, and there's many other things out there, but there's things like that. One of the things we sort of laugh about, you know, we've had people who don't know how to drive a stick come down to Haiti. And all we have are stick shift vehicles, you know. And so learning how to drive a stick before you come would be very, very handy because you're going to be stuck if you're not. So
the amount of people I've had to teach,
yeah,
it's truly alarming.
And, yeah, and these are long-term missionaries. And you just think, okay, I don't know how this is going to work. But, you know, those are things too. But, you know, really focusing on things that will benefit the people. One way to really understand it, I think, is to understand the history of the country. If you really understand the history of the country, you see this country's been poor forever. You know, they've really never improved, or maybe they had a period of time that they were a lot better and they've fallen off. It really helps, you know, your understanding of the people, your sympathy, you know, with the people, and will help, you know, in teaching. Maybe it's nutrition. You know, nutrition is a big part of that problem as well. Lots of things out there that you can learn how to teach. Take it to the mission field, and then you will be a productive part of the team, which is just outstanding.
You know, I think one of the things I often overlook this, and, you know, we experienced this when we were in Mozambique, and I just thought it was so powerful. And it's absolutely going in line with what you're saying, especially in the learn how to teach this category to other people. You know, there was a woman that was working in Mozambique with the organization we were working with, and she just had a hobby of sewing. And she taught that to the women, and these women are now self-sufficient because of it. Like, it just, you know, so it can be anything from a hobby that you have, but if you are able to teach that to other people, to, you know, certifications and degrees and things like that. So understanding that there's so many avenues and options out there for what you can do, but just being prepared to use that, it's just so important. Next question for you. You know, everybody learns differently. So what are some of your favorite avenues for language practices? Just because I'm with you. Learn the language. It's so important. Because translators and interpreters are two very different things. And you don't want people who are not comprehending what you're trying to say to interpret you. Because that can be very wrong. So if you're just able to learn the language and do that on your own, it can save you a lot of heartache, so much heartache and headache.
Absolutely. That's so true. You know, most people don't understand the difference between a translator and an interpreter. You know, a translator is someone who translates exactly what you said into the language. And so, you know, from a medical standpoint, we need translators. We need somebody who's going to ask the exact question that we ask. Interpreters will interpret your question, maybe wrongly. That's sort of the problem, is they may not have the knowledge base or the education to understand what exactly you're saying, and they may change the feeling. I remember one time we had a short-term missionary had come in from a local Christian college, and he was talking with one of our employees, and the employee said that it was talking about the long-term missionaries, and said that they really respected the long-term missionaries. Well, the word for that was fear. And so this college fella thought that he was saying that he was afraid of the long-term missionaries instead of respected. And so misinterpreted that completely and caused a lot of problems, you know, because of this misinterpretation. And so it's that kind of thing where misunderstandings take place. Mm-hmm. And the person never really gets it. You know, there's no way they can really figure it out. And so learning the language, I think, is important so that you don't have to use interpreters or translators. Everybody learns differently, and that's sort of the hard part. I really need a visual source, and so it's very important for me to write the words out. And so I will use a digital pen and an iPad to write the words out, or maybe have a notebook that I'm writing the words out. We're learning Hebrew, and so writing that out is very important for me to be able to see it. And then just hearing it isn't enough for me. I've got to visualize it. The apps that sort of will, if you're very hearing based, Pimsleur is a very good one. It's basically just you're listening to conversations. And if you can learn that way, that's great. I can't. And so I've got to be able to see it. And so, you know, the kinds of things that, you know, that I will use are, you know, I use an iPhone app that's great. And I use different ones. As far as what kind of language, you know, that I'm looking at, you know, we already spoke French. And so learning Creole wasn't that big of a step, you know, for us, which was awfully nice. But something like Hebrew is an enormous, you know, step for us. I personally really like Duolingo. That's a good one for me. Because I get that both. I get sort of the auditory, but I also get the visual as well. And so those are my kind of favorites. It's going to vary per person. It just all depends on how you learn. And so you have to sort of figure that one out.
Well, Mom is in she's a Duolingo fiend.
She is. She loves her some Duolingo. Yep. And she can learn so well.
She's turned it into a competition.
Oh, it's always a competition. That's right. And she does so well. Her Hebrew is really good. So it's she's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many great apps out there. I mean, Mango, Duolingo, Rosetta Stone, Pimsleur. Before You Know It, you know, all of those are fantastic. You can audit language classes at your local university or community college. When I was taking French in college, there were several people who were auditing the class, and I thought, you know, that's brilliant that you're getting, you know, an experience like that. You can go through your local church to find, you know, community partners. My husband used to, he would teach English to international students when he was in college. But he got to pick up a lot of their local language as well. I think that's a brilliant way to do it. There are also podcasts that you can listen to. I know Duolingo has one for a bunch of different languages. There's one that's like a 5-minute coffee break French kind of thing. And so, you know, they can be really short and it's just teaching you and training you how to listen. So there's so many options out there to at least learn a little bit. You know, I prefer the immersion way of learning, you know, the sink or swim, go in the deep end and have to figure it out. But there are so many different ways that you can have at least a little bit of experience before you go, which clearly we think is really important.
Very important. So, absolutely.
So I have a couple more questions for you. Uh-huh. And these are going to be more on the end of if you are looking to partner with a long-term missionary or a nonprofit or something like that. These are kind of those kinds of questions. So first off, you know, what are some of the, because you've got to be picky when you're trying to find a nonprofit or a church or long-term missionaries to partner with long-term. I mean, you being nitpicky is so important. So what are some things that are important for you to look for when you're looking for someone to partner with and potentially be a long-term missionary with?
Well, I think it's really important to try to decide what kind of activity you're wanting to be a part of. You know, if you're looking for just a ministry partner where they're preaching, that's great. You just need to know that that's what you're going to be doing. If you're interested in providing healthcare and they're just a ministry partner, you're going to have a disconnect. And so that's sort of an immediate problem that could happen. So make sure you're partnering with somebody who shares your values and will approach things and use your capabilities to your fullest potential. You know, I think it's very important to be able to look at outcome measures. And so this is one thing that we're very, interested in, is to look at our programs and test them and make sure that they're working well. And so in my mind, it's very important to be a part of an effective ministry or organization who's taken the time to measure their outcomes. And so instead of saying we feed, you know, however many thousand kids, look at, are those kids gaining weight? You know, are those kids getting into getting proper balanced nutrition? And so there's nuances like that that seem sort of small up front, but become really large when you're working in it long term. You know, I think another thing that's really important is, you know, many denominations have great resources for training missionaries up front. Some denominations have none of that, you know. And so I think it's important, or if you can do it, if you're a part of a denomination that trains their missionaries, that is absolutely, it's so beneficial. It's hard to even put into words how powerful that piece is. And so many denominations do that very well. And being part of that is, I think, is a very, very good idea. Denominations who don't do it, it's hard to get prepared, you know, to be able to do it. And for organizations, it's a little bit daunting to try to prepare people. People really need to be prepared before they come and not depend on the organization to prepare them. So that's sort of a challenge with some people. But those are the kinds of things that I would look at. You know, you want to look at your security situation. You know, many times missionaries, we see this all the time in Haiti. Many times people just sort of waltz down to Haiti because they have a heart for missions and they have no idea the level of violence that they're walking into. And they think, well, you know, everything's going to be okay. You know, hope is not a strategy. You know, you need to have something a little bit more concrete than that. And so people really, really get harmed not only physically, but emotionally, when they're not prepared, you know, for the level of violence that is there. And it's so much worse than in the United States. And it's personal. And that's sort of the thing that people can't handle. So I think making sure you're fully aware of the security situation and you have somebody who's wise speaking into your life and who will tell you the truth. You know, that's one thing. It's very important that they that these people know you and they will tell you the truth about yourself and then the truth about the situation, because there may be a mismatch there that you don't have any understanding of. And so those are some really, I think, important things to consider.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm with you 100% on all of those. My next question, and actually my last question for you for this episode, is how to go. So you found the organization that you like, and you're wanting to kind of learn a little bit more about them. What is kind of your preferred method of stepping into those long-term missionary waters? Because you don't just find an organization, reach out to them, call them, say, hey, I'm moving down there for a year next week. Like, how do you recommend those increments of time going?
Well, you know, I think there's some things that you can do to prepare yourself. And so one of those things is to live simply. And I think one of the commonalities in mission work is typically you're forced to live extremely frugally, where you just don't have much. And so all of those things that you had back in the States that you derived pleasure and joy from, they're not there anymore. And so, you know, it's a real challenge for people. And just assuming that you can leave, you know, materialistic United States and walk into a low-tier country that doesn't have electricity, running water, or sewage control and do well, that's not a good assumption. That's probably destined for failure. So I really think that prior to going, a long time prior to going, really becoming a whole lot simpler in the in your lifestyle, spending a lot less money, living on very little, getting rid of your stuff. People have way too much stuff. We had way too much stuff. We got rid of our stuff and we are so happy we got rid of the stuff. We don't want it back. Mm-hmm. So please, if you took our stuff, we don't want it back. Please do not send it our way. You know, there's a joy that you really receive in living in a simple fashion and not needing a whole lot. And so doing that, living like that for several years before you go over, where you really get used to it, I think is very, very important. I think, you know, being able to experience your host country for as much time as you can before you make the commitment to go is very important. We recommend people come down, you know, for a week, several times, stay for a month, maybe even stay for 3 months, if people could even stay longer, where they really get into the day-to-day swing. You know, you really understand sort of the flow of the work cycle and what it's like, you know, what's it like washing your clothes? You know, there's probably not an automatic washing machine, you know, and so that's going to take you several hours a week, you know, to wash your clothes in a bucket and hang them up to dry somewhere. Getting used to that kind of scenario, I think, is very important. It also really lets you know if you've got what it takes to stay long-term in the country. And so if you're just barely hanging on the whole time, you're not going to be very very profitable there in these host countries. And so you really need to thrive. You need to be able to have the temperament and the humility and then just the toughness to be able to thrive in these situations. And that doesn't come naturally to very many people. That's things you have to train for. So doing that gradually over time, mm-hmm. I think, is very important.
I think that's such a great point, you know, because life can look, I know for us and for the nonprofit that, for Live Beyond, that team weeks look very different from non-team weeks. You know, you're the work looks different, the lifestyle looks different. You're not surrounded by 50 team members, you know, that kind of stuff. And so having kind of that understanding that it's not going to look the same, the work is still going to be great, but it's just going to look a little bit different. But then also what you were mentioning earlier about culture shock is very real. There's that 3-month point, then there's that 6-month point, and then, you know, there it can come up years later too, you know? So I think just, you know, really pushing through it, but also giving yourself a lot of grace, you know, that's just a part of it. But pushing through it and getting used to it, you know, it can take time. And if you're prepared for that incrementally, then it's going to make your time there that much easier than just, you know, trying to do it in the long haul and realizing that it might be easy to burn out. So I have appreciated this so much. And, you know, I think you've given us a lot of really great insight into kind of what it takes and things that can be very helpful for someone who might be interested in doing long-term missions. And so I thank you for spending time with us today and for giving us some really great insight. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I think it's a great topic of conversation. You know, the thing I would like to leave people with is that, you know, developing a love for the oppressed people is just key to living missionally. Those people may be your neighbors. They may be, a student at an inner city high school. They may be the homeless in your city, or they may be people in a different nation. But developing that love to help the oppressed, and that's what Jesus did. Jesus said he came to do that, that was his mission. Making that your life's mission is key to success on the mission field, whether that's abroad or whether that's at home.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just very, very grateful for this conversation. And always, it's a pleasure to get to chat with you. So
it's great.
I'll take every moment I
Absolutely.
Can.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, that is officially it for the Living Missionally series. Drumroll, please. We hope that you enjoyed it. We would love to hear what you think about it. If you would like to learn a little bit more about Live Beyond, you can check us out online at livebeyond.org. We also have an Instagram, iLiveBeyond, so please go check that out as well. We've mentioned this a little bit earlier, but Dr. V has a fantastic, phenomenal book, Live Beyond, A Call to Surrender and Serve, and it really is great. He talks a lot about these kinds of subjects, what it was like for him to go from being a very successful practicing surgeon to now living in Haiti in a very different lifestyle. So definitely check that out as well. We have some really incredible programs. Again, if you'd like to learn more, you can check us out online. But if you feel like it's been put on your heart to donate, you can donate online as well to support some of our really amazing programs, our feeding program, our maternal health program, and our school. But that is it for this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget to go out and live beyond.